post it from
everything before it really was just time.
All right. So, I wanted to make the last point with regard to the first, with regard to the previous sugya. So Isaac had this persistent question about what does it mean conceptually to say that there are four mechayvim or multiple mechayvim of the zikin versus one mechayv? So, do any of you have strong feelings about this?
Why is it?
Yes, I mean, I didn't really understand where he was coming from initially.
I still don't know what that means. Like, what does it mean, like, this one Messiah? Like, what is the...
So I guess for Avram, it's...
No, I get, like, structurally, like,
what it means.
Well, like, so, like, what is that Messiah? Like, it's so bland, right? It's so broad. Like,
yeah. Yeah, so, you know, when I first read the Brisker Rav, I thought, you know, it's, you know, like, as Cole said, that's, like, a virtue of a theory that there's one unified Mechayiv for Nezikin. And then the Peturim are just these, like, isolated Xeris HaKasos. But the more I think about it, the more it sounds problematic to me, because what does that mean that there's one Mechayiv of Nezikin? If anything, that sounds like some primitive idea that you broke it, you pay. Right? What would that mean if there's one Mechayiv of Nezikin? So just, like, you...
Why is that primitive?
What?
Why is that primitive?
It's primitive in the sense that it's just, like, this one brute idea. Right?
Seems very intuitive to me.
You broke it, you pay?
You don't think Torah law in general has, like, one basic assumption?
No.
You pay for what you break?
No, you might say, like, you violated somebody's rights, you have a duty to restore their rights.
But what's the problem with violating someone's rights? You broke their rights, so you pay for them. But still, you broke
okay, them. Or you committed something, committed a wrong, and therefore you have to remedy the wrong. Those ideas make sense to me, but...
I don't get all those times all addressed to be broken.
That there's one Mechayev?
Yeah, that's all the same thing. I mean, I don't
know. So for example, so I think my substantive objection to it, I did not have it sufficiently worked out on Monday, but thinking about the last 2 days, I think the objection would go like this. So, Shein v'regel are pata b'rishus harabim, for instance, right? So, why are they pata b'rishus harabim? Because there's no basis for liability, right? The Mazik didn't do anything wrong, right? He just drove his car down the road the way he was supposed to. The Nizak did something wrong, right? He abused the way a Rosh Hashanah is supposed to be used. So it seems plausible to say that even if the Mazik broke it in some very primitive sense, like there's no basis to claim compensation or to hold him liable.
But if you say that's one Mechayev, you just say he didn't break it.
But that's just facts. Okay, so first of all, that seems factually inconsistent with the description of the case. He did break it.
This is such an artificial point I'm making. Like, why does Mechayev have to be anytime you physically break something in paper? No.
Okay, so let me
push back. One Mechayev is anytime you wrongfully cause a financial damage, job, emotional, psychological.
But that's not true with the Brisker Rav, because the Brisker Rav thinks that the pure regular Brisker Rav is exer psychosis. So he thinks that, like,
yeah,
he thinks that on the Tzad HaShavah Shebehem general Mechayev, it's like, yes, the guy put his payros underneath your tires while you were driving, but still, you broke it, you pay.
That's true.
And now the Satorah comes along and gives you, like, a special tour, like, Mon Menashemai.
Okay. Well, I mean, the Mitzvah Rav is the least generous conception of one Mechayev theory.
Is that?
It's, like, the least generous conception
okay.
of one Mechayev theory.
That's
very easily come along with a Mechayev theory that isn't.
So I'm not sure if that would preserve, like, the one Mechayev theory. The moment you come on, so I'll contrast this in a second. Well,
yeah,
I think then you're already moving there in the other direction and saying, no, we really, in order to reconstruct Nezikin, we have to have a sense about all these different paradigms of what kind of action is a violation of somebody else's rights, what kind of action is a wrong action.
It's still a Mechayev.
Well, I don't know what you mean by one Mechayev then, the moment
there
we have...
There is a positive cheer is one Mechayev. That at the end of the day, there's one great wrong that is committed, and everything of the Dinam of Tzur and Chayev and Sinam
okay.
are just a discussion of did you commit that one wrong?
Okay, well, you have to figure out then to what extent it's one wrong. It's like one unified picture of wrong. But certainly on the Brisker Rav's extreme interpretation of one Mechayev, I think you could run into these kinds of issues. So A, it seems too... too coarse or too primitive to just say you broke it, you pay. For one reason is the Rosh Hashanah case, Shein v'regel Rosh Hashanah case I just described. But even just to understand, what does it mean to say that you broke it? like your response to my description of the case, like, oh, maybe I didn't break it if my tires rolled over the Kli and Rishus HaRabim. I think to understand what it means substantively to say that you broke something, you need the Torah to provide these actual paradigms, right? So like, yes, Shein Verega Rishus HaRabim, the Torah says you didn't break it. And that's what you learn from both the Chiv and the Torah Rishus HaRabim. But the Brisker's analysis doesn't allow for that. Right? The Brisker's analysis says, like, oh, you broke it, you pay. And now, like, the Xer Sakasiv tells you that you have some special dispensation. Yakir, you want to say something?
Well, I'm not grasping what exactly the issue is with the Shazarab, why the Shazarab makes an objection. And clearly the Briskerov would not take it the way he took it. Clearly, he would take it that there was some lapse of Shmira. I mean, you ran afoul of the Klal that you have to be Shomer, you have to look at Shalacha, etc.
But I don't have to enter Shazarabim.
They do.
You do.
You ran afoul of that, for sure. I mean, this is Niflal, this is Niflal in the broad category of the Wotlash, Rasa, Lacha, etc. And it's just that because in this case, because of factors particular to this case, the Torah is giving you a discount. So because in this case, the Nizak is more at fault, or because your lapse... because your lapse was explainable in terms of the way people usually use Rishus HaRabim, because you're right to use Rishus HaRabim. But that doesn't take away from the basic fact that it's in the category. Meaning, that doesn't take away from the fact that it's in what the Gemara says that Tana Shava is. Meaning, I also understand the second part for the same reason. Meaning, if you're asking, well, how do you understand you broke it, you pay, the Gemara isn't very clear about that. Brisker Rav is basing his love on Mishnah, which says it clearly identifies the Tzad HaShava. The Brisker Rav is just identifying that phrase in Mishnah is the Mechayiv of Nezikin.
No, but remember, the Mechayiv of Nezikin is independent of the Peturim, right? So,
right. But the Brisker Rav's take on what the Mechayiv is it is the Tzad HaShava. Like that phrase in Mishnah, where it's the Tzad HaShava Shem Ha'im.
Dr. Mahazek.
So that is... If I remember the Brisker Rav correctly, he takes that as a statement of Mechayiv of Nezikin. And that seems to be, at least to me, a sufficient definition of what breaking it may be.
So I'm saying a case where the Nizak throws his china dishes into my board. Right? So it sounds like to me the Baal HaBor did not run afoul of any Klal and Nezikin.
If you're saying the same point, though, why don't you have your board covered? That's a lot of Shira.
You have to respond and say, like, no, I did run afoul of the Dinah of Nezikin, just the Torah gives me a special tour in that case. That's how you want to...
In each case, either you say that, or you identify this as not falling under the category of Dekhil has expressed all that. Meaning, you might say that in this case, we have the freedom to do that, because then throwing the kelim into the boar is not just for kelim. That might be
a patur of what?
What? That might be a case where there's
just not
no
sazik.
Right, wasn't no sazik, exactly. I mean, risk
even rush, though it's my boar that.
I'm not sure what risk rush would say in that case.
Right.
But
so I would say.
I think either response he has is reasonable.
My response is to say that no, the Torah creates a category of boar to show and gives us the rules of boar to show that. The burden falls on the Nizak to exercise caution. And obviously when he throws his china dishes into your boar, then that doesn't fall under the Mechayiv of boar. Right? That's part of what the Torah is communicating in the Torah and the Mechayiv, that oftentimes the duty falls on the Nizak, not on the Mazik.
Right. So,
and you're saying the Brisker Rav would say something like either...
One of two things. Either he would say that
that's
this is not
Nizak HaMazik.
This is not Shmiras HaLacha. Forget the Torah's case of boar, just the Mishnah's definition of what Maaseh Hezek is. This doesn't constitute Maaseh Hezek.
Or but how do you know that? Like how would you get to that point?
You would analyze the category of Shmiras HaLacha. You would say, well, is this a case which is Shmiras HaLacha or not?
And how would you know how to fill in what's considered Shmiras HaLacha?
The case
of
the Gemara.
I mean,
you're asking how would we know, or how does the Mishnah know? Is your question like how the category comes comes into being, or how we as...
So I'm saying we know it through the avos nizikin, right? The Torah gives us like paradigms of when shor is potter, when bor is potter, and that's how we know where to draw the lines between cases of liability and cases of non-liability.
Not from the Ptur, meaning that the Tzadah Shava, I think the risk Rav's take on the Tzadah Shava would have to be that it's from just the cases themselves, meaning it's not a function of the special Ptur the Torah gives in the cases, it's just a function of...
And how would the risk Rav's thing get him to, like, Hevei Ba'ama, right? So it's disanalogous, right, disanalogous to the cases of our Avos.
But
it's
true with the Tzadah
Shava. How is it disanalogous to the cases, meaning the relevant common denominator of the cases is Dark Elazic Shoros Nolachim. And Evan is Dark Elazic Shoros Nolachim.
So you're saying Dark and the Hazik communicates some positive information. Shmiras and Alecha communicates some positive information. And like when we analyze like the concept of Shmira and we analyze the concept of Dark and the Hazik, we could like reconstruct like where the general fault lines will emerge as your position.
I think so. And that's prior to any consideration of the two in the risk of Rosh exception.
Right.
And then on top of that, we now introduce...
So I would think that the concept of Shmira is itself not really filled out until we know liability cases, right? The liability rules are fleshing out what's considered, what cases you have duties of Shmira and what cases you don't. Right? So it's exactly the Torah is communicating the concept of Shmira through the Avos Nizikin.
So you're saying that there's no, it's incoherent, under a conception to have a case where you have a duty of Shmira if you're not liable. If Hezek occurs.
I'm not saying it's incoherent, okay. But I'm saying that there might be some mitigating, right? So you might have a duty of Shmira, but if it's a Maisa of the Nizak, then you're not going to be liable because the Nizak did it. But the way we fill in what's considered Nezek and Shmiras and Halacha is through the categories that the Torah provides. And part of flushing out the categories is through analyzing the cases of Chiyuv and the cases of Ptur. Right? So I would say, yes, you don't have a Chiyuv Shmira you don't have a normal Chiyuv Shmira for unanticipated things that a Shor might do. Right? And we see that from the Pturim of Karen Tama. And the Risk Rav's got to say something else.
Clearly the Risk Rav doesn't think like you.
Correct. Right. So this Rav is just saying that he's thinking that no, you're always liable so long as you have a Chiyuv Shmira. And I guess in short time, the reason why you're Pater on Chatzi Nezek for a Karen is nothing to do with Shmiras and Alecha, right? It's just local Teres HaKasim.
Exactly, yeah.
Right? And how, according to describe, how you're supposed to flesh out the category of Shmira?
You look at the common denominator of the cases of Nezek that the Torah gives. I mean, how does the Mishnah come to it? It's very good.
You can't look at the common denominator of the cases of Nezek. You're saying just the Chiyuvim?
The case of Chiyuv and the Chiyuv of Ptur.
No, but you can't look at the Pturim because the Pturim is just is an ad hoc Zer Sarkasa.
No, you're looking at those are also cases from Shmiras HaLecha. I mean, don't distinguish between cases of Chiyuv and cases of Ptur. All the cases of Shor that the Torah talks about, all the cases of Bor that the Torah talks about, all the cases of before we conceive of any Ptur in any of these cases, there's a combination. That's how the Mishnah seems to get to it. Meaning a straightforward reading of the Mishnah within the Brisker Rav's reading that Tzadah Shava is demonstrating Machayiv. It's just that we have these cases of Shor, we have these cases of Bor, we have these cases of Ish.
Right. And we have antecedent conceptions of Shmira.
And from those cases, we deduce the common denominator of those pieces is some sort of Shmira responsibility.
Yeah, so what do you think, Avram? Avram, do you have some thoughts on this?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, like this whole idea of Tevurah, like, I don't know like how to capture it. So I just find like the idea. I thought we just sort of color, like you can have a sort of broad expansive definition, but it's too bland that like it opens up for that's what my issue all along.
That's your issue all along, right? As you pointed out on Monday even.
Yeah.
Right. That's already pointed out then. Yes, I'm sympathetic to that objection.
Yeah.
I think this category of general nezek uninformed by the liability rules of the avos is like just uninformative.
Yeah.
Right? It's empty.
Yeah.
And if you're just trying to say that, well, you could figure out some substantive stuff just knowing about pits and animals independent of liability rules that govern them. Right? It's something about your knowledge of like ownership and oxen that will dictate like the contours of the category. Jonah?
So I guess just a response. So I thought like you, Carol, I think a lot of your thoughts are really interesting about this.
You think a lot of?
His thoughts are really interesting about the Sama Shabbat.
Yeah.
How it's like kind of, I think it depends.
So you're disagreeing with your Chavrusa here.
No, but I think like an interesting,
starting off like
first wrinkle on that would be that like, I think it's really Mechudosh in the Briskara to say that there are possibilities of Turin outside of the number that they mentioned for like four short Asian, etc. There's like I probably want the risk rep to mention. By the way, because I hold this Mechayim, there are possibilities of like separate outside Turim of like if we could find a weakness in Dark Nazi Shinas and Alepha.
Right.
And I wanted to say that as well.
So I think
I'm just saying that's not tour. That's meaning the risk rep says there are things called Turim which are what's dealt with in the Mars here.
They're Hilchosein.
Right. So it's not Hilchosein. And then there are things that aren't
like Anus. Like a pure Anus is an interesting question, I think. I thought you pointed that earlier. I thought that was your point, right? That the Ptur Anus has got to be a non-internal nezek. It's not derived from the category of Zikin.
Right.
It's some like... I don't think it's related to Tatsiyah from Nezek Prasal Lacha even. Maybe it's just some general consideration.
I guess it's kind of...
So Ptur Anus you can have.
It's kind of interesting.
The question is going to be then whether you think the Ptur Anus, though, is... We'll have to look at this in Rishonim later. Some Rishonim explicitly describe the Pturim of Hilchosehem as Ptur Anus.
Right.
So that's going to be problematic for your conception of the risk of, because it sounds like our definition of anos with respect to the category of nezikin is extracted from the cases of the avos.
Right.
It's not somehow independent of them.
Right.
Right, so the idea is that if my animal does something so crazy, then that's like a kind of anos, and that's why I have a dispensation. The Aruch HaShulchan said that when a person has a chiyuv shmira to look where they're going and they fall into a pit, that's considered anus vis-a-vis the baal habor, right? And the baal habor is anus with respect to a cognizant person who walks into it.
Right.
So it sounds like there the category of anus is coextensive with the ptur kalim and ptur adam bibor, not independent of it.
Right.
So that's good. That's going to take a stance whether anus is internal or external to.
Right. I mean, it's just, I guess, like, clarity's sake, I don't want to say it's like, you know, the silence is deafening, but the risk group doesn't mention that.
Right.
In terms of clarity, it would be really helpful if he said, therefore, because of my crazy shita on, not my crazy, my shita on this unified thing, then we can even have categories that are outside of the same, which is just general.
That's right.
There
we go.
It's not a chaser shmira.
Yeah.
Well, what's your answer? I think Yakir is doing a good job. I think you have to go. I mean, I think this is where the tension lies. I think, you know, whether do you find that Yakir's argument is that there's positive and instructive information that's conveyed by just the Tzara Shava itself, independent of the liability rules of the others. So if you find that persuasive, then I think you can defend the risk growth. I'm less convinced by that argument, but I do hear the where Yakir's coming from. So, anybody else have thoughts on this before we move on? Move on forever from the Avos and Malachos, Avos and Nezikin and Tzara Shabbat. Yeah. Beer, you have thoughts on this, or?
Great.
Yeah, you wanna? You like?
I think it's an important part.
Well, yeah, it's a very important part, right? And this is, I think, it's interesting because when I first read this scrub, I thought it was a virtue of the theory that he has this unified Mechayev and Nezikin. But now the more I think of it, the more it seems to me that a Tzad HaShavah, a unified theory of the Zikin, independent of the information of the others, reduces to some sort of primitive, you broke it, you pay thing. And the argument against that is that, well, how would you even know what constitutes you breaking it, right? Or you being the cause of it being destroyed. I think the only way to flesh that out is to look at the substantive halachos, right? So I have to see. In a case of bor, and somebody throws kalem in there, the Torah teaches me that the bala bor didn't break it. The bala kalem broke it in that case. Right, so Shakir's saying, well, we could look at the concept of shmira and figure it out from that.
Even then, though, what you be essentially what you'd be saying is that about the zikin, it's not only that they're not relevant, but they're only relevant for the tefillin that come on, which is doesn't make any sense.
You're saying that
if there is some sort of positive goal or positive right that comes from shmirat, right, then it means that it doesn't matter what the other things you can are, because that's not the mega rule. But like the meta rule is about shmira.
Right.
So then the other things you can themselves have no
correct.
Have no value.
They're just devices that serve to get us to this category, and they carry arbitrary to
right.
In certain cases.
But it really makes it seem like they're really not so necessary. They're like on a very, very, very low level, like technically, I guess,
correct.
Like practically.
They're instruments. They're instruments.
Isn't that, in a sense, the most straightforward reading of the Torah on that page?
I mean, the Lahov Sam Gemara?
Yeah.
I thought the Lahov Sam Gemara is like an open, you know. Well, yeah, so it was like the Dr. Graf thing, you know. So, what's the intuitive interpreting Gemara? Definitely that's the way Briscoe was interpreting it. I would have thought that the Lahov Sam can mean, like, literally, like, their liability rules. Right? Good. Okay, so let's move on now to the next sugya. Let me introduce this sugya. Very, very difficult sugya. So it's important to, A, have just an arsenal of the different questions that we want to bring to bear on the different cases we'll explore. And secondly, to just have a very clear sense of the different cases themselves, what's happening in each case, and that will allow us to extract like certain general themes from each case. So I want to first introduce the general questions that will govern our analysis of the sugya, and then I want to take a look at the concrete cases so that we're all clear about what we're talking about. Okay. So the general discussion obviously is about what happens when you have multiple actors, multiple agents that lay the groundwork or cause a ma'aseh nezek. I think it's a shnei mazikin or mazik shehizik al yidei mazik acher. Now, in analyzing this discussion, I want to raise five broad questions. The first is, how persistent are acts or conditions of nezek, especially in their ability to survive other actors? So the idea is that, you know, I light a fire, how persistent is my maisa, my creation of a mazik of esh, how persistent is that, especially against some other actor using my esh? Right, so does my action, my liability, carry through somebody else's usage of my thing? Or does my maisa nezek become extinguished when somebody else takes it over? Obviously, the fire is not extinguished, but the liability is extinguished. Okay. So let me just point to the cases that will obviously just to flesh out concretely where this will come up. But we'll talk about these cases in greater detail in a few moments. So we'll come back to these cases. Obviously, in the case of Borman Escaldo, that's our first case in that book of Aleph. So I put a rock down in the Rosh Hasharabim, and it gets kicked around by a few people before somebody either stumbles over it or it gets kicked into somebody. So the question there is going to be, to what extent can my placing the rock, my liability for creating the bor, survive other people's usage and kicking around of it? Right? Or do you say that the new actors somehow override, they extinguish my liability? Now, we should also be sensitive to the possibility that other actors might suppress my liability in the interim, but once they remove themselves, my liability resurfaces. So if you saw Tosus already, you get a sense that some Rishonim are going to say that I put a board down in Rosh Hasharabim, I'm presumptively liable. Somebody else kicks it around. While it's moving, it's the liability of the second actor. But once it becomes stationary again, then the liability of the original creator of the board resurfaces. So you might say that a second actor could somehow suppress my liability without extinguishing it forever. So that's one example, one case that we'll see. Another case is the Gemara later on. I think this comes up where you have Daf Yates. That might be, this might be the Chav Gimel. Just Chav Tes. Wait a second. Yeah, Chav Aleph through Chav Gimel case. So the Kelev Shenadal Harara, so the dog takes a coal outside of, it takes a piece of bread outside of the oven, drags it out of the oven, and a coal comes along with it. And the dog eats the bread, and the coal ends up lighting someone's hay, someone's gadish, right? So the question there is going to be, can the oven owner, the person who owns the coal, the gacheles, can he be held liable even though a second person's dog dragged the gacheles to the gadish, right? So does the liability of the baal ha-tanur, the baal ha-gacheles, survive the action of the caliph? Okay. A third case, which comes up explicitly in the Gemara, this is both a sugya and on Samech Beis, I believe. Let's make sure. And on Chaf Beis. So it's the case of the Gomel Hato and Pishta. Right? So you have the camel that has a load, and the camel knocks into a Penvanis Nair. So we'll see this, we'll see a discussion in the Rishonim. Does the Nair, does the liability of the Chenveni for having a candle outside his store, does that survive the action of the camel which knocks it over and carries the fire elsewhere? It's very similar to the Caleb case. Although we'll see some discussion in that in the Rishonim. Finally, another case is the Gemara on Dafid Zion and Dafid Tess. One person owns a tarnigal, somebody else ties a string to the tarnigal's leg. The tarnigal then jumps around and, you know, the string or the rope thrashes and destroys things. So is there any grounds to hold the tire of the strap liable for the damages? Right? So does the initial act of the second person, the agent who tied the rope around the tarnigal, does that survive the actions of the tarnigal itself? So it seems clear that the bala tarnigal is liable, but can we also hold the kosher as hadalil, can he be held liable as well? So these are all cases that are going to test to what extent one person's maisa nezek survives interference by either some other behemoth or some other person.
The last one is obviously distinct because the question is, obviously, for the Baal, the Baal owner is tired. They're only seeking to get a second
field
on the
first time. I mean, would it supplant it altogether?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good point. You're saying it seems that in that case, in the carnival case, there's no halavina that the kosher hadalil would totally supplant the.
Yeah, that's the same
question. But there is some question in the other direction. There's a question maybe the mice of the Baal carnival, the carnival would fully extinguish the mice of the kosher as hadalil.
Yeah, okay.
So in that direction, it's...
But it's one direction. In some cases, the whole day is.
Yeah, so we'll see. I mean, a few of the cases might be like that, though. We'll see. In a few of the cases that I mentioned, it seems like everyone agrees that one person is certainly liable. The question is, could we extend liability to the second guy?
Also, are we assuming that all of this is a general question in Nezek and not particular to the types of Nezek each one of these cases?
Yeah, so we're going to see that obviously there would be grounds to distinguish between Boar, Haitian, Shore.
Okay.
Yeah. So first I just want to introduce the cases, and then we'll...
Yeah.
First I want to introduce the considerations, and then we'll get into that analysis. Okay. So that's the first consideration. The second question we want to bring to bear on these cases, this arguably is the most difficult, is what does it mean to be the cause of a tort? Okay. What does it mean that you caused the damage? Now, like in common law, you know, this is like a. Some people think this is a big issue. Some people think this is not a big issue anymore. Like there's an intuition that the person who should be held liable is the person who caused the harm, right? You have that intuition. Yeah. Right. Is that the intuition?
Yeah.
especially unless you broke it, you pay for it theory, right? You have to figure out, like, causation is like the most important thing to determine. You have to figure out, like, who the proper cause is. So, and obviously when you have multiple actors, it's going to be hard to figure out who the cause of the harm is, like the cause, right? Like the sole cause. You could also have to figure out what the standard for being on cause is, right? You'll see the Gemara has this conception that's true in common law also, sometimes called but-for causation, like meaning but for your action, the harm would not have occurred, right? You see, the Gemara always uses this, like, ilav turfa, if not for your ox, like, my boar would not have caused damage. So it sounds like the Gemara is already taking a material view on what's considered being a cause, right? This counterfactual, meaning, in the absence of your thing, would the damage still have occurred? So A, we have to figure out to what extent a cause is significant in determining liability, and B, what constitutes a cause. Now, other people think that causation is really like an outmoded concept, and determining liability is like causation shouldn't really bear on chiyuvim. So this is like a very famous case, you know, idea. Well, the idea is that in many ways, a nizak contributes to the cause of the damage as well, right? So it's a famous case, and it's like a British case. A person had like a chimney, and he used to like smoke in his house, and like the smoke would go out through the chimney. But then his neighbor like redid the roof or something, which blocked the chimney. And so whenever time this guy would smoke, the smoke would like stay in his house and wouldn't go out through the chimney. So part of the litigation was the guy was like, well, your redoing of the roof like caused my chimney to like backfire. Right? Caused my chimney not to allow the smoke and the fumes to escape. But like in this case, I think the decision actually held that no, like the nizak smoking is what caused the smoke to harm him, right? It's like there are always multiple factors that contribute to the actual nezek. And like cause is just this ambiguous term that's metaphysically loaded that sheds very little light onto who should be held liable. So the Gemara has a few cases that seem to take a stand on this. But this is a very important question. Let me just ask you, do you have like strong intuitions about this? Whether cause is like an important part of determining liability?
Yes.
Yeah, you think it should be? Yeah, that's your...
Intuitive.
Well,
intuitive.
It's like if you broke it, you pay thing, right? So yeah. You have to figure out like who caused the harm, right?
I think even the conception...
But even in that regular versus Sarabim case, where like the Nizak puts his payros under your car, right, so who's the cause?
You could object before you turned your car on, so you are in some way a cause contributor.
Yeah, you're in some way a cause, but like, is causation really what's important? Right, or is, I don't know, is like the fact that you acted somehow? Right?
The fact that you acted somehow can be a cause.
So not necessarily.
If you act somehow and it doesn't contribute to the overall outcome, then your actions are relevant.
So first of all, so let me give you a clearer case. So you might say, on the Ramban's Adam Mor Le'olam, I feel like the onus to Enosh Chiyah, I feel the onus Gomor. So the hurricane picks you up and tosses you against the window, and you shatter the window. It seems very clear over there that the Adam is not the cause of the damage.
Well, right? Look at you, Neil Plainness, over here. What kind of cause are we talking about? He didn't have a physical body, the window wasn't broken.
Yeah, so good. So, yes, there's some sense in which my human person is involved in the action.
But it's still a level of causality. There's primary causality, secondary pressure, etc.
Yeah, and you think you're the cause.
To some extent, yeah, you would be the cause.
So here, take a better case then. So it's very clear that had I not have broken the window would have been broken by the table that came through the window a second behind me.
You're still the cause.
So am I the cause?
You're still the cause, because you broke the window.
So on but-for causation, I'm not the cause. Right?
But-for causation, you would be. Direct causation, you are.
So you think I'm still the cause, not the hurricane?
I don't know. I'm not going to make a stance. I just think it's a very logical, tenable position one could take. that would be the primacy of causality. We won't talk about who's the most immediate cause.
Right.
I just think that this is a very difficult stance to take in light of Chazal and Rishonim, because the Gemara's terminology about causing a Maisa, Hazak, or Grama, or Garmi already has a framework. There is such a thing as causation, and there is a more limited sense of causation that we're using for tort theory.
Good. So it might be the way I respond to that. On the view that causation is not so important, I would say that Grama and Garmi are really trying to create a new category of liability. Maybe we could create a category of liability out of causation alone. Right? And then Grama and Garmi are the... But even then, so I might say that's a special category of causation damages, but it doesn't reflect on the liability rule in general. Right? So maybe that is... Garmi is about causation, but the rest of the Zikin is not. Right? Adnan Mazik is not. That's one answer I could say. The second thing I might say is that even in Garmi, it's not really causation. It's not really the right term to characterize the category of Garmi. So we'll talk to that. Okay. You know, this causation also becomes more complicated in a lot of the Baba Basra cases. So take the case where, for example, I'm doing some activity in my home which causes vibrations or disturbances in your home. Right? So who has the right of way in that case? So like I'm doing something in my property which is disturbing your property. Right?
So my bees are
eating your seeds.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So who has the verdict? Who has the right of way in that case? Now, it doesn't seem, we know that it's not the case that the person who's causing the harm is always the person who has the burden to move. Right? There are other considerations. So it's not just that like, oh, it's my bees are causing damage to your field. Right? There are other considerations about like, who has an easier way of avoiding the damage? Right? Is it more onerous for the Baal HaTvorim to not be allowed to have bees at all? Or for the guy with the mustard seeds to move them inside his rishus just a little bit? Right? So the point there is that the standard for who's in the wrong or who has a remedy is not determined by who's the cause of the harm. Right? So it seems clear in a lot of cases that causation is not really what we're looking for. So let me give a few cases in the Gemara where causation comes into question. Yeah, Doc.
Let me just say that is a cause, that the, in that case, the Nizak is the one actually causing the damage.
It's like backwards causation?
Yeah.
It's like he's causing damage to himself.
Yeah.
I agree. Why can't you say that?
So, I mean...
If that's what you want to say.
Causation is not a useful term. Ah, good. So causation is not a useful term. You can't do a standard for liability. That's exactly what it's trying to show.
It's the other way around. Causation is too inclusive, not because it's not inclusive enough. Anything can be considered causation.
So it's over inclusive, right?
Yeah, it's over inclusive. You need a more specific term.
Right.
But it's not a subset of causation? Yeah.
Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
I don't know.
That's the point.
What do you think on the side of the room?
He was going to say it here, but he thought, you don't know. This side of the room.
Ah, I'm asking Avram Ben Beer if he's willing to talk up.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
You only get more refund about yourself. When you talk about Torah, you're yourself.
Yeah, Jonah, what do you think? I was thinking
along the lines of how we've kind of been explaining this here. In terms of that, yeah, like it's not necessarily causation. Just instinctively, I felt more like how we've been discussing it.
That causation is not.
Yeah, as we said, we gave the case of the Torah, where we've been talking about, like, sometimes it seems that the Nisak is the one who, like, the quote unquote, violence. So I guess you could try to say,
right.
Oh, well, he's the cause. I don't know.
Right. I think also, like, in the case of Regel versus Sarabin, maybe there's some sense in which the behema caused the damage, right? But that's not relevant because he has the right of way.
Right. It's hard for me to say that someone who placed their fruits in the rishus harabim and someone else tripped over it, that they caused the damage. They might have, like, to his end. I mean, obviously, this gets into the definition,
right.
And Yeah, it's always a gray area.
But. Right. So I think the point is that we have a conception of causation in general, and it's not fully determined by tort liability rules.
Right.
It's not like causation is just like whoever happens to be liable, he's the cause.
Right.
That seems like a very extravagant rewriting of our general concept of causation just to explain a few cases in Koshya Mishpat. Right? So I think better to hold on to our conception of causation and then say maybe Koshya Mishpat is about something other than...
It's a more ambitious understanding.
I appreciate that, yeah. Okay, just gotta keep your ambition in check.
That's what you're there for.
Noah.
It seems like it could be a direct parallel to the singular Mishayev of Ezekiel in the sense that there is some sort of tort. And then all the secondary considerations also play into the game. So it seems like causation may be the first thing, that there was the cause. And then we also look at broader considerations.
Yeah, that's what Leah is saying, I think, almost, right? That there's some causation still factors in, but then there are mitigating considerations, you know. Who's like the least cost avoider?
But you see,
right now I'm just trying to motivate the issue rather than take a firm stand on it.
Yeah.
Okay. So let me give a few examples where this will come up in the Gemara. So we'll see a sugya about a case where somebody trips on karka and harms himself on a boar.
Dude, that's
dumb. Right, so the idea is that you, or vice versa, right? You trip on the boar, but you harm yourself on karka. So the idea is that something caused the fall, but the injury occurred on something else. So the question is, you know, well, we'll see that tomorrow in a few minutes. That's we, you know, the cause is something other than the actual harm. I think anybody's mentioned the cause of the fall and the cause of the injury.
This is also, I mean, just to add to the picture, I mean, also when we're reading the causality, there's a question of when you have cutoff, right? In terms of if he trips and hurts himself, well, if he didn't put on shoes that morning, he went to run outside, if he didn't go outside, he wouldn't trip. So causality always begs the question of what is the scope of causality that we're dealing with.
Very famous philosophy paper. I want to say it's by
the tower thing?
By Mackey. Mackey has this case of Nicole listens, so he'll tell me if I'm wrong if it's Mackey or not. But I think Mackey's paper is about, so usually you want to say that a person lights a match, so like is lighting the match and like setting it to the carpet caused the fire, right?
Yeah.
That's what caused the building to become ablaze. But then Mackey says, well, that's not really true, right? Maybe like the fact that there weren't fire sprinklers in the building is what caused the fire to become ablaze, because had the sprinkler system been working properly, it would have extinguished the fire right away. Right. Or if the carpet had not been flammable, then the lighting of the match wouldn't have caused the building to burn down. So Mackey's point is to show that like we think that causation is like some like very simple, like the person who did the action would set the thing into motion, but that's false because there are all these other necessary conditions that have to obtain in order to consider it causation.
You know the story of the tower?
No.
There's like once a philosopher science wrote a story about how like someone made a tower such that a shadow was cast on the spot where his father was murdered. And when someone says, why is the shadow there? You'll say, oh, because the sun is reflecting down. But no, the real reason the shadow is there is because this is the spot where he was murdered and the tower was built around the shadow. There's like a challenge to causality.
Yeah, there are also these challenges to what extent like causation is like coherent in general. Or to what extent it's coherent to say like one person caused it without taking into consideration all these other factors that were necessary. So let me skip. So the Gemara has that case. The Gemara has another case where there's a loud noise, like a sudden noise, which causes somebody to fall into your boar. So, right, so who's going to be liable in that case? The Baal HaBoar or the person who made the noise? The Gemara has a case where one person puts down a stone, which causes somebody to trip into your boar. Right, so there's like the cause is separate from the actual occurrence of the damage.
Did you say that?
I put down a stone which causes somebody to trip into your boar. Right? So the point is that if not for the boar, the person would not have been harmed. But if not for the stone, the person would not have fallen into the boar.
It's like a moral look here.
This is just like one of the necessary conditions for causation case. We'll see a few cases of this as well. Like obviously the cases with the Balak Acheles, you know, the dog takes the fire, right? So who caused the damage to occur, right? The person who lit the fire or the dog that took the coal with him? There are two other cases that we'll also see. So Gemara talks about a case of five people who sit down on a bench. Chamisha shiyosu al safsal. So four people are sitting there and the bench doesn't break. And then Fat Joe comes and he sits down and the bench breaks. Right? So in that case, it's pretty clear that if Fat Joe had not sat down, then the bench would not have broken. At least it would not have broken now. But it's also clear
Fat Joe, no matter that a very different way.
That's a moral luck case. but if not for the four people who were already sitting there, then Fat Joe sitting down would not have broken the bench either. So we're going to see a question, how do you distribute liability in that case, right? It's also very clear where there are four people contributing, there are five people contributing, but somehow the last guy was a Mako Patish. But both the first four people were necessary, the first four people were necessary conditions that had to obtain in order for Fat Joe's action to cause the bench to break. So we'll see Mako is shown in that case. Good. So that's what we'll have to figure out in the causation issue. Is causation relevant? And we have to address Liat's question. Maybe there's a basis to talk about primary and secondary causes. So maybe there's some way to distribute liabilities between a primary cause and a secondary cause. Or especially in the way where, yes, the primary cause is going to be held liable, fully liable, but maybe in a case where you can't recover from the primary cause, you could have recourse to the secondary clause. So we should think not just about distributing liabilities of each party pays 50%, but maybe there's a causation structure, if we go with causation, that allows for one cause to be held fully liable, but when he can pay up or he's refusing to pay, then you could have recourse to the ancillary clause. So that's something to keep in mind. That's the possibility that we'll see soon.
Is that the case where there should help him on the way?
So we'll see a case in the tour where he talks about this. It might also be a case of Mamed. We'll talk about the case of Mamed. And Moshe Lefi Para. Those might be cases. Okay. The third question we have to bear in mind when we analyze these sigyas, are there certain actions or forms of agency that are liability trumps? I mean, they're like liability glue. In the sense that no matter what happened beforehand, this new action is like, for whatever reason, is like a liability trump or a liability glue that the liability sticks to this new agent. So you see how it's different from the first question, because the first question asks, how persistent are certain maisa and nezikin in time? Right, so to what extent does lighting a match survive actions by later actors? This question is different, and it asks, are there certain forms of agency that are just liability trumps? That they soak in. They're like magnets for liability. Right? So obviously, remember we saw Tosus already. Tosus says that like a maisa adam bekavana is just like a liability trump. Right? Maybe there are like multiple causes. Maybe everyone should be, like there's so many factors and everyone should be held accountable, but there's something special about adam bekavana that like that attracts the liability away from everybody else. Okay, and obviously we should keep in mind, is it any maisa adam? Maisa adam bekavana? Or maybe just there's a conception of the last action, the last maisa is a liability trump. Does everybody get have a feel for this category? Alvin, you want to say something?
No, it's not.
Well,
it's not.
You agree, right? It's,
yeah.
So, but that's the third thing. And what exactly would the rationale be for a liability trump? Keep in mind, we'll pursue this later. One of the salient features of Adam in general is that it's bein b'shogeg bein b'anos. The fact that Tosfos thinks there's something special about Adam b'kavana and making him a liability trump seems to suggest that it's something other or more than just the mere category of Adam which attracts the liability. So there's something additionally, there's something further special about authentic kavana. Okay, Avram? Yeah. Okay. Looks like you're having
all my facial movements are being analyzed.
It looks like you're having a seizure there or something.
I had oral surgery.
So that's what it is. All right. The fourth question is related to the third and the first questions, is in cases when we have a liability trump, does that extinguish the prior actor's liability, or does it merely mask it? Right? So even in Tosis' case, where other big Havana absorbs the liability, so suppose you can't hold a person liable for whatever reason, suppose he ran away or suppose he died, can there be secondary recourse to the person who to the thing that acted before him? So if you think that a liability trump extinguishes the prior actors, then of course you cannot have recourse to the prior actors. But if you think the liability trump of Adam is a mere masking of prior liability, then maybe that you could recover from the earlier actor as well. So we'll see some formulations that seem to take a stand on both sides. The fifth question and the final question that I think we should... Well, I guess I should say it may divide into 5 and 6. The fifth point that I should be aware of is Liad's point. Obviously, the possibility of distinguishing between different Nezikin in this sense, right? So maybe Bor will be different from Ish will be different from Shur. Adam, Shalom Bekavana, Adam Bekavana, both on the side of how persistent the first actor's action is, and also on the side of the trumps. Right? Maybe different mazikin will constitute different kinds of liability trumps. Peter, do you want to say something? Or?
No, I'm good.
What?
I'm good.
You're good?
I'm good.
I just thought it was funny that I said Trump.
Yeah.
Okay. Exciting.
Well?
Exciting.
Yeah, exhilarated. Got a tingle. The sixth and last point, is when we do distribute liabilities across multiple actors, so is the presumption that we're always going to distribute them evenly? It's like five people contributed to the mezek, so it's just liability divided by five. Like two people contributed to the mezek, so it's liability divided by two. Or is there some other scheme that weighs the liability according to each actor's contribution? So like maybe if somebody digs a bor eifach and the next actor digs a ninth tefach, maybe assuming that liability is weighed according to how deep the bor is, so maybe one person should be liable for 8/9 of the liability and the last person for 1/9. Or is the idea that so long as there are multiple actors, then you just distribute it evenly? Do you have, anybody have strong feelings on that? Noah?
Yeah, just like in the case of Bor, like there's clearly a difference in Chiyuv. If you want to pinpoint the Chiyuv between the Baal Tzakala versus the Bor Megala case, there's definitely a difference between the Baal Tzakala versus the Bor, the person who's the Galgal, the Levana.
Yeah, right, there's different, they're playing very different roles.
Yeah.
Right. But the question is, do you think it's sensible to split? Tosas always talks about chatzi-chatzi, right? And a lot of Rishonim say, oh, you split it in half. But you think, like, gee, why should, like, 50-50 be the right way of assigning liabilities as opposed to some weighted measure to figure out, like, each person's chelek and contributing to the damage, right? Akira, what do you think?
Not sure.
You're not sure? You hear both sides?
Yeah.
Avram, how about you?
With
me, which way?
In both sides.
Yeah, okay, does anybody feel strongly one way or the other? I mean,
I'd like to imagine it's weighted. It just seems more fair.
Yeah, so there's one formulation in the Shulchan Aruch. I'm not sure. So Shulchan Aruch and Beer, do you want to say something?
Yeah, can you maybe say that if it's weighted, then it's more natural to extend who we view as an actor, meaning that if a guy was only responsible for a small piece of the nezek in whichever way it was, if he had an equal chelak, then we'd be less likely to say it's high. But if he was going to be high only 5%, then we'd include him in this pool of actors.
So you're saying that, say it one more time?
Yeah. Would there be a correlation between our hagdara of who an actor is and the amount which that actor would have to pay? In that, the more that we view it as, we could say that this person's 5%, this person's 5%.
Right,
you know,
that's a good point.
No, 95%. Then we say, oh, he's only 5%, he is an actor as well. But if we say, if he would be 5, it would have to be 50-50.
Very good.
Then we say he's not an actor.
Yeah, so that's a very interesting point. So you're saying that it's reasonable to think that if we have a higher threshold for who's considered to be an actor, then once you are an actor, you just share the liability evenly.
Yeah.
Right? If we have like a lower threshold for who's considered to be an actor, then it makes sense to have this weighted assignment. Though. Yeah, I think that's the next one. That's a really good point. Right? That would certainly explain the fairness to meet Jonah's point of like why 50-50 liability makes sense, right? You have to meet some minimum threshold of accountability, and then we just assign it to you evenly.
Right.
Yeah, I think that's the next one point. So, I agree. I just want to point out that the Shulchan Aruch in Siman Taf Yud Sif Yud Gimel has an interesting formulation about one person digs 8 tefachim, and somebody else comes and digs another tefach. So, Shneim Chayim Yitzikim Kol Adam L'Fima Shachachar. It's not clear what this phrase means, but I think on the face of it, the phrase implies a weighted assignment of liabilities, right? Each person in proportion to his contribution, each according to his contribution. I think that's the simplest impression. I don't really comment on this. But I think the straightforward language implies this weighted assignment of liabilities. So that's something to keep our eyes open for. Aram.
Is it clear that like that the 9 tefach there would be more, I guess, like significant than the other ones? Because like I imagine a case like where you know sometimes like that.
Yeah, so you might have to weigh each case separately and see how the person was harmed. Was he harmed by the first tefach or the second tefach?
Something like that.
Right.
Yeah, but, like this is what classifies as like a dangerous, like you know, 5 feet diving in the pool versus like 6 feet diving.
No, that's why it's not a case of 9 and 10. Because there's 9 and 10, and the 10 guy is more alive.
Right.
But yeah, so that's from our closest there says that in the case of 8 and 9, everybody agrees that each person contributed.
The same amount.
Not necessarily in the same way, but in the case when you go from 9 to 10, there's an argument to say that the 10th guy did everything.
Right. Especially if the person is like him, so they killed him.
Exactly. Yeah. Okay, so those are the things we want to keep in mind when we go through the cases. But I want to do for the next 29 minutes, 28 minutes, I just want John to be worried. Is to actually take a look at the cases so that when we come to them later, we all have a clear sense of what's going on in each case. So this is this would be very helpful just to think in terms of like concrete cases and what each case is supposed to show. So the first case is the case of that Bogum et Aleph, the Borhan Skalgel case. This is a case where we know one person puts down the boar, it gets kicked around by a few actors. And there's a discussion that we've shown in both what happens if someone gets harmed as a direct result of the kicking, so the ball's in motion and it harms somebody, and what happens after the boar comes to rest and then someone trips over it. It seems like most Rishonim think that once the boar comes to rest, the liability returns back to the Baal HaBor, the person who placed it. There may be a view in the Meiri that disputes that. I think if you read the Miri carefully, it sounds like the Miri is saying that the liability is assigned to the person, the last person who kicked it, not to the Baal HaBor. But certainly the Derech HaMelech and the Rishonim is to say that the whole discussion here, Machlokes, is just about when it damages the Hadeh Bikazli while it's in motion. That is huge Machlokes Rishonim. But most Rishonim think that when it returns to a state of rest, the liability is reassigned back to the placer, the first placer, the Baal HaBor. Yeah, I think the Miri might dispute that, but that's what emerges from this Gemara. Okay. Notice that Mara doesn't really distinguish it between Ragli Adam and Ragli Behema, but that becomes the Rishonim think that there's an important distinction there. So this is obviously the case in Dav Vav. We know what's happening here, so we don't have to dwell on that case yet. That's the first case. The second case, it's good to know that Gemara on Mem Aleph and Med Aleph, two people who dig a pit. So in the case where one person digs 9 tefachim, the second person digs 10 tefachim, so it's Machlokas, Rebbe, and the Kanakama. Rebbe holds that even in this case, they split the liability for Nezikin. Right? Shnehem and Nezikin, according to Rebbe. So one person digs 9 tefachim, the second person digs 10 tefach. According to Rebbe, you split the monetary liability. According to the Tanakama, it sounds like Achron Chayev. It sounds like the last actor is liable in this case. What's just unknown about this case is whether there's something special here about 9 versus 10 tefach in the Torah. So if one person digs 9 tefach, and then the...
So the Chacham say the last guy is chayev.
Yeah, he's chayev from all the Nezikin, both Misa,
the
conversation. So the last guy is liable if the person died. Because like that, the 10th tefach is maybe a killer pit. But they split the liability for damages, even in 10th tefach. What's important for us, we don't care about the death case so much yet. We just care about the compensation case, where if Machlokas gets Rebbe and Chacham, whether you go after the last actor in this case, or do you go after both people? They split the liability. Tosos here is the finish that we saw in the Shulchan Aruch, that the Machlokas Rebbe and Chachamim about Nezikin compensation is only in a case of 9, and then the second actor does 10. Why? Because then the last actor contributed something material in this case. Right? He changed it from a harming pit to a killer pit. How about Rishon Ches, the Zet Tes, in a case of the first guy dug 8 and the second guy dug the 9th, Kulam Chayav and Vinizakim. Then everybody agrees that they split the liability for damages. So Tosis is saying that the Chacham's position that you go after the last actor, that's only when the last actor did something material.
It doesn't seem to bear out from the Gemara.
What?
It doesn't seem to bear out.
Tosis is Kiddush?
Yeah, because if you look, only Rebbe's is Mechalik, which means the Chacham could seem to say that they're talking about both Misa and...
Right, you would think that. But Tosis is saying in a case where it's 8 to 9, everybody would agree that's what Shofar is... Not the Shofar's classroom, right? Okay, so that's the second sugya. That's the sugya in the knowledge about two people who dig a pit. The third case is the case on Chavches on the days. So this is a case of Bor Bekarko. So the Gemara says, the Gemara here suggests, in a case of Nitkal Be'eben, Nitkal Bekarko V'Nashuk Be'eben. So you trip on the earth, you trip on the ground, so no one applauds you to trip. But you broke the kli on somebody's board, somebody's oven that they left there. So it sounds like Gemara thinks that according to Chacham Yer Pater, but according to Rav Nasan, he would hold a filu mitkal v'karka v'nashot v'eben erchai. The Rav Nasan that we'll see, remember the Rav Nasan in the case of the board, shor shedachach the board, right? So Gemara thinks that it's machlokes from Nasan and Chachamim. What happens in a case where you trip on the karka, but you shatter the kli on someone's eben?
Right? What should you say?
So the Chachamim say that you go after the primary cause, the first cause, in this case the ground. So it's through the ground, right? You won't get anything. But Rav Nasan says that when there are multiple actors, you split the liability between them. And in particular, even further, that as Rashi points out, yes, so the liability is really split between the earth and the owner of the boar, but you can't recover anything from the earth. So, if you can't recover from the ownerless grounds, then you could recover everything from the second actor. Does everybody get that? Does everybody understand what's going on here? Yeah? So you see, what's important here is that the Gemara thinks that Rav Nasan's position, the Machlokas of Nasan and the Chachamim, on Daphne and Gimel is a general machlokas about what happens when you have two actors, two causes. The Chachamim say you always have to sue the primary cause, like you tripped on the ground. You have to sue the primary ground, the ground. According to Rav Nachman, you both are liable, and further, when one of the persons who's liable can't pay, you could collect everything from the second actor. As we're not very clearly from the Gemara's interpretation of Rav Nachman on Daphne. That's the third case. A fourth case, very closely related, is the sugya on Daf Nun Gimel Amud Aleph. This is a case where you hear a loud noise, a sudden noise, and that causes you to trip into someone's board. Right? So the noise is caused by something other than the owner of the pit, Rashi. So the Gemara says in this case that the Baal HaBor is Chayiv. Okay? So the Gemara says, why should the Baal HaBor be Chayiv, right? The loud noise is what caused the person to fall, not the pit itself. So the Gemara says, oh, this is also Rav Nachman's position. Right? Because Rav Nachman again holds when you have multiple causes and you can't go after one of them, you could recover fully from the other one. So you can't go after the person who made the noise, because that was just grandma. Right? He was a remote or a distance cause. Right? He just made a noise. How does that... So that scared you, and you happened to fall into the pit. You can't go after him. But since lo asher l'shalumei mehai, since you can't go after the person who made the noise, mishalim mehai, you could fully collect from the person who dug the pit. Yeah? Does everybody see that? Everybody understand the case? That's the fourth case. So there are two causes. There's the noisemaker and the pit owner. You can't sue the noisemaker because grandma sort of nothing says you could fully recover from the you could fully recover from the pit owner. Now obviously Rav Nachman thinks that in principle, yeah, that's Rav Nachman says. So there are two causes. In a case where one cause is exempt, you could fully recover.
Which is the primary case of Rav Nachman?
We're going to get that in a second.
Okay,
we haven't got that yet. That's the primary case is the shor shadach off the board. That's his primary case. But the Gemara is like appealing to that issue in this case still. Noah.
Why can't you collect from the noisemaker? It's because you don't know who the noisemaker was.
Or it's grandma.
Oh, because it's grandma, that's fine.
Yeah. He's not a mazik. Mazik proper.
No.
Proper. A fifth case, again closely related to this Rav Nachman discussion, is the Gemara and the Gimel Aleph. This is a case where somebody puts an Evan right near a board. Right? And you trip over the Evan and you fall into the board. So also again you have two causes. And then Bashur Benitka Ba Menachal the board. So the Gemara says that also depends on the Machlokas of Nasan and the Chachamim. So you see throughout the Gemara thinks that the Machlokas of Nasan and the Chachamim is the Machlokas that you have to appeal to when discussing two causes. And here also the Gemara, in fleshing this out, has the but-for theory of causation. The Gemara says, well, you might have thought in this case that the Baal HaBor can say the Baal HaShor, Ilav Bira Didi, Tura Didach HaVakati Lay. Right? Without my pit, even without my pit, your Shor would have killed him. Right? And the Gemara also has this response, well, Ilav Bira Didach, Avna Didi, my Avavka, not for your pit. What would my stone have done? Right, the idea is that if he just tripped on the stone and fell on the sidewalk, he would have been fine. It's only because he tripped on the stone and fell into the board that he was killed. Like Mar says, still, even though, so Mar says, still, this is dependent on Machlokas for Nasan and Chachamim. Right? So it's like these two causes. Yeah? Yeah?
The more I talk about causality, the more I'm like unclear why Bor isn't always a case of Roma.
So it is. The Ramban, remember the Ramban, even the Garmi said it's always a case of Roma. But Brahma is for other Mahazid. Right? So the Niskemalim cases are almost like independent of whatever principles other Mahazid apply. So it's like a special category Bor, despite the fact that if the Torah didn't invent the category, it would have been Pater.
Okay, fine. But then either way, though, while we discuss the question of causality with regards to Machado, with regards to Cleo, we still have to keep him in mind, though. No?
So it doesn't seem like it. It seems like
it seems like we showed them all agree that none is irrelevant.
Exactly.
No,
yeah.
That's pretty much.
It seems like it.
Right. So I mean that itself is already significant in terms of how you understand causality like for the time.
Correct. Right. Well, the idea is that Miss K Mamon becomes an independent source of causation.
Yeah.
An independent basis of liability, and a bore is not Grumma with respect
to. Well, let's say like my shore does something to Grumma, and I use the concept of Grumma to attribute it back to my shore.
So possibly, yeah, there's my focus about Grumma as applied to a shore, and Garmi as applied to a shore.
So the type of Machai of Mamon Hamazik can't be derived that through Grumma, but the concept of Grumma may be used to derive a Machai of.
Correct, meaning in applying Niske Mamon, you might want to figure out whether that Mamon is Mazak Ali De Grumma or not. But in terms of connecting the Mamon to the violin, like the category of Mamon is supposed to solve the Grumma problem.
Okay.
That's like the basic.
Because I mean, that's obviously the very primary field of causality.
So the sixth case is the case of the paradigm case. Of shor shadacha eschavero lavor, right? So one ox pushes a different ox into the pit. So this is where you have the explicit machokes in Rav Nachman and Chachamim. Chachamim say that the baal habor is pater, because you go after the primary cause, like the first cause almost, which is the shor that did the pushing. You can see Rashi implies that explicitly. Rashi's formulation in a moment. But Rav Nelson disagrees and says that you split the liability between them. See, it's interesting Rashi here in Gimel when he tries to explain the position of the Chachamim why you go off to the first clause. It says something like he has the but for thing. Ilad turcha lo nafal. Right, if not for the shore, the boar would not have done anything. But also, v'hai d'chifa ma'isa b'yadayim ha'vei. Sounds like he's trying to say like there's something about like the ma'isa b'yadayim of the shore, which explains why we should go after it. And then Rashi explaining Rav Nachman's position, he split the liability, he says, sheharei bein shneihem hemisu. Right, like between the two of them, like the ox got killed. Right? It's interesting, it sounds almost like if you read Rashi, it sounds like Rashi in explaining Rav Nachman is trying to avoid any causation language. Right? So if they can explain the Chachamim, he says, oh, because the shore did the ma'aseh b'yadayim, the shore pushed him in. But in explaining the Nasan Rashi, he says, oh, because between the two of them, both were factors in the boar being killed. He doesn't want to say like the doesn't use the active voice like both of them like caused the boar, the shore to die. Just like Bain Schneigen, between both factors, the shore was killed. Okay. Does everybody have a sense of those cases? Like they're somewhat repetitive. They're all just, they seem very variations on two months each. Okay, these cases are slightly more complicated, the next few. So the next case, this is our eighth case. So this is the case of the, what's that? Our seventh case. And this is my eighth case.
Does it matter?
Well, you have number seven?
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, I'm sorry. I skipped the case. You're right.
Oh,
it's right here. No. It's not here. The seventh case is the. Correct. The seventh case is a shor ve'adam shadach l'lavor. Okay, there are three actors. So in a Nezikin, Rava says you split the liability between the shor adam and the boar, like Rav Nachman said earlier. But in an arba dvarim, only the adam is chayiv, right? So the things that are uniquely adam contributions, nezek, tzar, rupa, shetz, and boshes, those stick to the person, but the other things get split between all three. So it's nezek divided by three. Well.
So it's like the most important
case? Yeah. For our purposes right now, it's really just, it's a repetition of the principle of Rav Nachman. The eighth case is a case on Chazal from the base. This is the case where the dog takes the baker's coal and drags it to the dish, and it burns down. So what's striking here is the Gemara seems to say explicitly that in a case where there was some negligence on behalf of the oven owner, right, he wasn't shomer gafelaso, so then the liability is going to be split between the baal hagafelas and the baal hagala. Right, so the idea is that if I had an oven and I didn't like stand there watching my oven and the dog comes and drags the coal out and burns something down, the liability is split between the owner of the tanur and the owner of the kelah.
Is there anything formulated that way? Is the fact that you weren't sure
No, it's only because the Gemara of Zukimta here is trying to, the Gemara is trying to finesse the case, and that's the case of Shishimer Gachalasa. So the Gemara is clear that if he did exercise complete Shmira, that would pop to the Baal of the tanur. But then the implication from the Gemara that we've shown him all are working off of is the inference that if he wasn't shomer, then you split the liability between them.
Past two cases, were these only like according to Rav Nachman, or is it everyone holds this?
I mean, this Kelev case. It sounds. I think the three actors case is only according to Rav Nachman. I think that's pretty clear. This last case, Chafalik, is not clear if it depends in any way on the machlokas. No one explicitly weighs in to say this should depend on the machlokas. So it's possible that the Chachamim would agree to split liability in this case.
Because of circumstances.
Maybe there's something about Ish, that Ish is more durable, so right, so Ish survives even a later actor. Mm-hmm. Right, that touches on the earlier point. You have to distinguish from Chayim, right? So maybe there's something about a boar being passive, and the shore is dope being active. But in this case, maybe something special about fire, the fire like persists through a second actor. Good. That's the Kelev Sha'achal Harara case. You see, Tosos makes a big deal out of that case, so it's important to have a handle what's going on there. The ninth case is the Gemara on Chav Beis Amud Aleph and Chav Beis Amud Beis. What's going on in this Gemara is Machlokas Rashi and Tosos. What's important for us is that it's a case where the Chen Veni has a candle outside his store. A gomel comes along, and the gomel knocks over the fire and causes it to spread throughout the store. Okay? That's what the Gemara says. The Gemara talks about Misach Seches. The animal does something to spread the fire. So there's Machlokes, Rashi, and Tosos, so what's going on here? The way Tosos reads this is that the Havamin on the Gemara is that the Chen Veni should be fully liable for lighting the fire outside the store. How many that he should be fully liable even though the camel spread it? The Maskana and the Gemara is that they split the liability. 50-50. That's how Tosos reads that Gemara. Rashi doesn't comment much, but the Pnei Yeshua and other Achronim reading Rashi think that Rashi has the exact opposite reading of the Havnina. They think that the Havnina and the Gemara is that the camel owner should be fully liable for all the damages because the camel is the one that spread the fire.
You are those two readings again?
Yeah. So Tosus, if you read the Gemara there, you'll get a...
Yeah.
Tosus says, so the case is the Chen Veni has a candle outside the store, and the camel knocks it down and spreads the fire. Tosus says, the Havamina is that the Chen Veni should be fully liable, because he lit the fire initially and didn't watch it. Maskana is that they split the liability because the camel also acted on it. The camel helped spread it. And Yeshua, reading Rashi, says the exact opposite. He says, the Havamina in the Gemara that the camel is fully liable. The camel owner is fully liable for spreading the fire. And then my son of the Gemara maybe is that they split it. They split the liability.
Was this both within Shimon's Rashi? So not those Pnei Yeshua and Tosos had read Rashi?
No. Rashi doesn't say anything.
Okay.
But Pnei Yeshua thinks that if we steam as Lush and Rashi, you can tell that he read the Gemara differently from Tosos. So you'll see this is going to be very important for how they read our Gemara. Presumptively, who's liable when one person lit the fire and another person's agent spread it, right? Tosos thought for Hakhila and the Havamina definitely the person who lit the fire. Tosos thinks it's very clear that lighting a fire survives a later actor. to spread the fire. Rosh is much less committed to that. Okay. Well, see, that's what Tosfos Lashitasa at this point in three places, that lighting fires, your liability for lighting a fire survives later interference. Whereas Rashi is less sanguine about that here. Okay, ask the Gemara about the Gamal. That case is be very important. The tenth case is the case of the Tarnagol Shehizik Bidali. So, the Gemara on Yutasim Jays. What's important for us is the Gemara's Ukimta Be'aduye Adye. So, it's one person owns the tarnagol, another actor ties like something around his leg, ties the rope around his leg. The animal jumps around like in a wild manner, and it thrashes the rope around, and that causes things to, it destroys things. So Rashi says in that case, only the Baal HaTarnagol would be liable. That's Rashi's interpretation. Right? The person who tied the thing would not be liable at all. The owner of the animal is liable. Tosos disagrees, and Tosos suggests that the person who tied the rope should split the liability, because it's also like Aish. It's like I lit a fire on the camp on the tarnagol's leg, and the tarnagol just spread the fire elsewhere. So you can see it's Tosos Lashikasa that lighting a fire, calling this Aish, survives interference by the tarnagol spreading it. Whereas Rashi is not convinced by that. Rashi thinks that only the Baal HaTarnagol can be liable, not the person who tied it.
Should the question of causality, could the question of causality be a test of the case for your overall theory of Nozick? In terms of if you think it's about economic motivation to limit like damage on society, causality is no longer an important factor.
Correct. So that is a theory. People who have these economic views think that causation is totally irrelevant.
Yeah. But that is a very tenable logical position to take.
Right.
Because you just don't care about personal culpability.
Correct. You just least cost, right? So I was thinking the Dvorim case, the Beast case, you just see who could more cheaply avoid the damage.
Yeah.
So for sure they don't care about damage. 100%. Yeah. We'll talk about this. We're going to have time. But if you read this thing called the Coase theorem, so Coase was like thought that the solution to all these economic issues is just to find the person who's willing to pay more to bargain out of the liability.
Yeah.
We'll talk about this more in depth, but and that point there is that, yeah, causation is totally irrelevant, right? But the interesting question is, even on the other side, in the right space view, even there you might think that causation is not what's relevant.
Okay. But it also seems to not be that any addition of the suits are taken.
So you have to see
right?
That...
Okay, because at least nothing we've presented so far outside of the text has said, like, oh, it doesn't matter if causality, you are involved and can afford to pay for it.
Yeah, I think let's reserve judgment on what comes out of this. Let me mention the last three cases very quickly. So you'll look at these cases, we'll talk about them in depth, but just so you all on the same page as to what they are. The last three cases are, so this is case number 11. Tomorrow I'm in Vav on the base. So I walk your dog over to somebody else's field, and like I leave it to munch. That's the case of Mamin Behemas Havero Al-Kamas Havero. There, the liability transfers from the owner of the dog to the human actor who's leading it. That's the case of Mamin. So if I lead Jonah's dog to Liat's estate and allow it to eat there, I'm liable, Jonah's not liable. So there are multiple. So there's a Baal, it's an interesting case because there's one Baal HaMamon, and it's a different actor who leads the Mamon.
It's kind of like a
I'm a shas that kalosha haber b'chaver. Similar. But so the point is here, there's multiple actors. One person's dog, but a human agent who's leading it.
Right.
So the question is, how do you distribute liabilities in that case between the dog owner and the human actor?
Do you ever shoot to have a dog?
What?
Do you ever shoot to have a dog?
It doesn't seem to matter to them. Right? Because the question is just like, does the mere human agency change the assignment of liabilities?
So this is when Kavana comes in?
Yeah, so we'll see. We'll have to analyze that. The last three cases is case of Marva Bechavila. So according to most Rishonim, that means that there's a fire burning, and a second agent now adds fuel to the fire, which is what causes the fire to spread. So like Liat starts the fire, didn't have the power to spread, I add fuel to it, and then that allows it to spread further. How do we distribute liabilities between Liat and me? That's this case on the Kamadakyud. There's the Gemara in that same discussion has the case of the five people sitting on the bench. That's the 13th case. How do you distribute liabilities between Fat Joe and the first four occupants? So we'll talk about that. And then the 14th case, and the last case, is this discussion of Moshit Lefi Apara. So I literally take an apple off Jonah's tree and I extend it to Liad's dog. So how do you distribute liabilities between me and Liad in that case? Similar to the case of Mamid, but it has different meaning. So I want you all to look at these cases. You'll see Tosus appeals to a lot of them. And we'll try to figure out what the general principles are for distributing liabilities between different actors. All right, Shkaf, so we'll stop here and we'll pick up on Monday. Yeah, Shkaf to you guys. Thanks to Jonah for sending it.